Second Court of Appeals. We have two cases on our docket for oral argument this afternoon, and I understand that counsel in the first case have announced ready and have informed the clerk of the time you would expect to argue. So with that being said, I'll ask the clerk to call the first case.
The court will now call Reverend Ralph Stephen Denny, Pamela Johnson, and Kenny Ortiz, and as representative of the estate of Patty Dunn,
you may proceed.
Hey, police court, Mr. Patterson. The plaintiffs, who are actually seated behind me, brought a wrongful death case against the defendants in this case. There was no claim for lost chance. There was no proof of lost chance of survival. This was a wrongful death case. In responding to the motion for summary judgment on causation, which the defendants filed, the plaintiffs proved a wrongful death case, that there was It was filed only on causation, of course, so negligence was not an issue at that point, but we proved through expert testimony as required that the death of Patty Dunning was contributed to or caused by the negligence of these defendants. The briefs have the references to the record in which Dr. Karam, an outstanding oncologist from Stanford University, testified to the fact that Mrs. Dunning would not have died on July 9, 2013, but for the negligence of the defendants. Now, the summary judgment was granted apparently because the district judge felt that we were running afoul of the Supreme Court's ruling in Kramer versus Louisville Memorial Hospital that says Texas does not adopt and does not accept the loss of chance rule. But this is not a loss of chance case. In Kramer, and I actually wrote it down so I'd be sure to quote it correctly, in Kramer, the court held that Mrs. Kramer could not, or that the representative of the estate of Mrs. Kramer could not recover for losses sustained, quote, as a result of the hospital's negligent deprivation of Ms. Kramer's less than even chance of survival. So the issue in that case was different than the issue in this case. In that case, the plaintiffs actually pled for loss of chance and asked the court to adopt it as a matter of the common law, not under the Wrongful Death Act, but as a matter of the common law. We proved that the death of Patty Dunning was a result of the negligence of this defendant. Now, the interesting issue in this case, of course, is that Mrs. Dunning was likely to die of her recurrent endometrial cancer at some point anyway. We acknowledge that. But isn't time always an issue in any wrongful death case? As we pointed out in our brief, if I die tomorrow, that means my chance of living longer is now gone. In every, maybe in every tort case, but certainly at least in every wrongful death case, there's an issue about timing, because we have to prove as a plaintiff that it is more likely than not, that it is probable, that the death of the decedent was a result, proximately, of something wrong that the defendant did. So when Patty Dunning died on July 9, 2013, when she should have had another year or 2 years or even 6 months, her death was caused, within the meaning of the Wrongful Death Act and within the meaning of the Texas PJC 50.1, by the negligence of these defendants. Now, obviously, the court doesn't have to decide that issue today because it's a question of fact. This came up in a motion for summary judgment. All we had to do was show that there was an issue of fact on causation, and we did that. The reason that we're here, the reason that the judgment was entered against the plaintiffs, was because of the district court's belief that this was a loss of chance case. It is simply not. There's no pleading, no proof anywhere that says Patty Dunning had a 30% chance of living to July of 2013, and that was taken from her. Quite the contrary. She had a greater than 50% chance of living well past that point, and that was taken from her.
But
I'm sorry?
In a wrongful death action, the Supreme Court held in Kramer that a wrongful death action is for death, that the causation must be linked to the death. And so if Ms. Dunning, as you have conceded, was going to unfortunately suffer from this terminal cancer, how could the medical negligence of the defendant cause, with reasonable medical probability, i.e. greater than 50% chance, her death?
The record in this case shows that it did, at least as of the day she died. And I don't believe that Kramer dealt with this issue of time. What Kramer said was you have to be able to prove to a greater than 50% probability that the death was caused by the defendant. And we did that as of the time that she died, which I think, again, makes this different than Kramer.
I don't understand your as of the time she died.
Okay.
Distinction.
Well, to me, that's the case. And I may very well be wrong about that, Your Honor. But the Wrongful Death Act says that the representatives of the decedent can recover for an injury that results in the death of the individual. In this case, that injury was the worsening of her condition because of no diagnosis, no referral, no proper treatment, the metastasis that occurred so that by the time she was diagnosed, it was already stage four and she had no chance at that point to live what should have been her normal lifespan. So when the life expectancy is taken from a person and that death occurs because of the negligence of that person, that has to be something that is respected and covered by the terms of the Wrongful Death Act and the laws of proximate cause in the state of Texas. An example, I think we put it in our brief, is what if Mrs. Dunning had been run over by a car? Now, she still had the cancer, but if she'd been run over as a pedestrian and died because of what that driver did, wouldn't she have a cause of action against the driver? Wouldn't her heirs be able to bring a cause of action for that? Of course they would, because her death would not have occurred when it did, except for the negligence of that third party. It's no different here. You have a third party who was negligent, and but for that negligence, Mrs. Dunning would not have died on July 9, 2013. I don't see anything in Kramer. I don't see anything in the PJC. I don't see anything in any of Kramer's progeny that address this issue directly, but just logically, and as a matter of the purpose of the Wrongful Death Act, when your loved one is taken from you because of the negligence of a third party, there has to be a cause of action for that. The action is not barred because she was going to die anyway, just like it wouldn't be if the car ran over her. There may be an effect on the damages because her life expectancy was limited, but why would that bar the action? When we have proved every element that we're supposed to prove, to hold otherwise is to say that anybody who has the bad luck to have cancer, to have terminal cancer, can never under any circumstances have their death compensated to their loved ones under the Wrongful Death Act when that death was actually hastened and caused by the negligence of another. That's our position.
How do you define terminal cancer?
Terminal cancer, I think, Your Honor, means that the patient is most likely going to die at some point.
Would you agree that in most situations, if you were diagnosed with terminal cancer, it would be a question of how long you have to live?
Sure.
You're going to die in the reasonably near future, right?
Yes, sir. Well, at some point. I mean, you know, there are five-year survival rates and that sort of thing.
Okay, so the second question becomes, did she have terminal cancer when she saw the defendant doctor?
That question is not really answered in the record. I believe that the defense expert believes that she did. Our expert says that it's hard to tell, as I recall the record, and that it was likely that ultimately this cancer was going to result in her death. But to say that she had terminal cancer at the time that she was seeing the defendant is not altogether clear. She certainly had apparently signs of metastasis at that point, and the cancer did in fact metastasize later.
Thank you.
Thank you. So we believe that the summary judgment was wrongly granted because we proved a case. We showed that there were questions of fact on causation. And this is not a loss of chance case. It's not governed by Kramer. It is rather a case about a woman who died when she should not have died, and that death was caused by the negligence of the defendants. Thank you.
May it please the court. The trial court properly granted the summary judgment which was filed because every expert that considered this case found that the metastatic endometrial cancer caused the untimely death of Patty Dunning. There was no evidence, no legally sufficient evidence, which linked some act or omission on the part of Dr. Rana or his practice to the death which occurred. The judge was not confused by application of some theory of loss of chance. In fact, the record shows that when there was an appeal that was attempted to try to certify some question to this court, Judge Haberkamp said, "I decided this case based upon the traditional application of evidence which was properly before the court in our summary judgment." It's important for the court to know that no one here has been deprived of any right to recovery. The lawsuit that was filed asserted two claims. It asserted a survival action on the part of the estate of Patty Dunning. That survival action was recognized at common law, and the Texas survival statute allowed that to be prosecuted. The Texas law recognized a cause of action which didn't exist in common law by adopting the wrongful death statute. But in the clear language of that statute, a wrongful death can only allow recovery to a certain statutorily qualified beneficiary if it is shown that the act or omission of a defendant resulted in injury that caused the person's death. Then the beneficiaries could claim. When we defended this case, we hired experts and we carefully cross-examined the expert, Dr. Karam, who was out in San Francisco. Dr. Karam acknowledged, as Justice Fitzgerald just mentioned, the metastatic endometrial cancer existed before Patty Dunning ever became a patient of Dr. Rana. She had endometrial cancer in the lining of her uterus years before she became a patient of Dr. Rana. She had a hysterectomy, which hopefully, under everyone's hope, that all of the cancer would be removed. However, Patty Dunning was in one of those cases where microscopic cells of that endometrial cancer had escaped the surgical boundaries that were removed when her hysterectomy was done. She had terminal cancer that had metastasized to other parts of her body before she was ever referred to Dr. Rana. Dr. Rana was referred the patient by a dermatologist so he could put radiation on another unrelated cancer, skin cancer, on the patient's nose. Dr. Rana did not cause the metastatic cancer. It preexisted his involvement with the patient, nor could he have prevented the metastatic disease that she had. In this case, when Dr. Karam acknowledged that she had a terminal illness before she ever became a patient of Dr. Rana, Dr. Karam's affirmation or declaration, which was as far as he would go and in the summary judgment evidence, says, "It is my opinion that Patty Dunning would have survived for several months, probably at least a year, with proper early treatment. But when he was addressed and asked the question as to whether or not it would have prevented her death, he said it could have been more successfully controlled with a possible combination of surgery, radiation therapy, and chemotherapy. The issue here is not that there was some sort of confusion on the part of the trial judge. The trial judge found there was legally insufficient evidence linking any act or omission of the defendant to the patient's death. Let me take the example that was mentioned in the brief or mentioned just a minute ago. The plaintiff's attorney is misplaced when he says the wrongful death requires some specific element of time. That is nowhere in the statute. But how can one with terminal illness who predicates a wrongful death claim on the basis of some medical negligence even recover? Well, the answer to that question is quite simple. For example, in this case, there was a small tumor of some sort that was less than 1 centimeter large deep in the body of Patty Dunning. In order to find out whether that was cancer and to be able to manage treatment, a biopsy, that is, a sample of that tumor, was necessary to figure out what it was and to gauge what treatment might be effective on those particular cancer cells. In this case, if Dr. Rana had convinced a interventional radiologist to, hey, I want to get a sample of that tumor, and the interventional radiologist put a large gauge needle into the body but negligently nicked the artery that was right next to this tumor, and Patty Dunning exsanguinated or bled to death by reason of that complication, a wrongful death action would be able to be taken and prosecuted against a negligent radiologist who tried to get that sample, because he directly caused the patient's death. In this instance, the allegation of whether or not earlier treatment was negligently prevented by the acts or omission of Dr. Rana, the best that could ever be linked to that negligence was the failure to prolong her terminal illness by a few months or possibly a year. Dr. Karam said it was possible that earlier treatment might have allowed her to survive a bit longer. Now, is the plaintiff without recovery? Absolutely not. The estate, fortunately, because we have our survival statute, could say that there was negligence in the treatment which deprived me of a certain period of time of less suffering during my life. That could have been prosecuted by the estate. In fact, it was. We didn't file a summary judgment on all causes of action. We filed a motion for partial summary judgment on the wrongful death aspects of the case, because every expert said that nothing linked a act or omission of the defendant to the patient's death. Now, Doctor, I think it's interesting when you look at the Kramer case, as Justice Walker said. The Kramer case talks about the need for the traditional standards of proof and the certainty that our Texas statutes require. In fact, there was one quote by the Chief Justice Riley of the Michigan Supreme Court that was quoted by the Texas Supreme Court in the Kramer opinion. And it says, imperfect as it may be, legal systems attempt to ascertain facts to arrive at truth. To protect the integrity of that goal, there must be some degree of certainty regarding causation before a jury may determine as a fact that the defendant did cause the plaintiff's injury and therefore compensate the plaintiff. To open a can of worms and say that there is a new recognized cause of action for wrongful death, that If the death would not have occurred at that time, and there was a chance, maybe 40% chance, that you would have lived longer, then a wrongful death case can be maintained. That is not recognized by Texas law, but the appeal in this case is tempting and requesting this court to recognize a cause of action under the wrongful death action for a death which may have occurred at a different time than it otherwise would have, when in truth and in fact the death of Patty Dunning was caused by the insidious disease of the metastatic cancer.
Counsel?
Yes.
You just described a quote that was put into the Texas opinion that dealt with the filtering down to the question of, is there a fact question?
Yes.
Why isn't there a fact question in this case?
Well, because it is absolutely clear in looking at the testimony, and Judge Heverkamp analyzed it, that the true cause of Patty Dunning's death was the metastatic endometrial cancer. It was not caused, her death was not caused but for the actions of the defendant. The evidence of causation was legally insufficient. There's not a fact question as to whether she was going to die of endometrial metastatic cancer. That was a given. Everyone agreed with that. The truth of the matter is that in order to prevail on a wrongful death case, they have to have that requisite proof that a act or omission on the part of a defendant caused an injury that directly resulted in her death. And that was not found in the record or in the opinions of the experts.
Of the death here of this on this particular day.
Yes, Your Honor.
Is in your position not a relevant factor in arranging or arriving at a question of fact as to whether the failure to treat was cause of an earlier death.
That's exactly right, Your Honor. There has to be, if the death was caused on that day by a negligent act, there would have to be legally sufficient proof that links it to the death on that particular day. And here there was not.
Okay, that's what you're contending is not present in the summary judgment evidence in this case.
Yes, there was not a genuine issue of material fact as to the issue of causation of death. There was a dispute as to whether perhaps damages possessed by the estate and survived by the estate might have been submitted to the jury. In fact, we were getting ready to try the survival action of Patty Dunning's estate when they abandoned it, filed a non-suit, and came to this court saying, we want you to recognize a new cause of action that has previously not been recognized under the wrongful death statute. I must say this, just in anticipation of some of the arguments made in the brief, Dr. Rana is not insensitive to the fact that an insidious disease of cancer affects every family. Almost every family doesn't escape the ravages of this disease. He's dedicated his life to treating it. But while we are sensitive to the tragic death, that does not give rise to a cause of action not authorized by law, nor does it lessen the burden of proof that is required by those seeking recovery for a wrongful death under Texas law. All we did was present appropriate proof that was evaluated under the traditional analysis of summary judgment evidence by Judge Heverkamp, and she found that there was no genuine issue of material fact with respect to the cause of the plaintiff's death.
So what you're basically saying is, when your doctor saw the decedent the first time, she had terminal cancer and was going to die. And all if you had a fact in dispute later, such as whether the doctor told her something, okay. But if you focus on whether it was terminal at the first visit, then it really you're saying makes no difference whether they started something then or 10 months from then, the death was forthcoming. And nobody is insensitive to this case, I assure you, including the panel.
Absolutely. Justice Fitzgerald, I do. That is exactly our position, that the patient had terminal cancer when she first met Dr. Rana. The issue about whether or not some conversations should have occurred or whether or not earlier treatment could have been started doesn't change the fact that metastatic endometrial cancer was going to take her life.
It was incurable.
It was incurable. That's what the evidence is, and that's what was recognized and analyzed by the trial judge, and that's what should be affirmed by this court.
I have a quick question. Do you think that this is a loss of chance case? I mean, do you think that there's a distinction to be drawn between pleading for loss of recovery of a chance, which the Supreme Court has said you can't get because you have to have causation greater than 50% to meet reasonable medical probability? Or do you think that that's just semantics and this is really a loss of chance? Or how would you characterize it?
Well, I'm glad for that question, because it is not a loss of chance case. We don't recognize loss of chance in Texas jurisprudence. What the plaintiff is trying to do is to kind of make it into a loss of chance that had he done something different, which had prompted earlier treatment, then there was a chance that she could survive longer. It's a misplaced analysis of a loss of chance. They're trying to say that a wrongful death action is proper when the act of a defendant caused the inability to prolong a terminal illness. It is not a loss of chance case, nor did Judge Haverkamp decide the case on that issue.
So you're saying that it's just a straightforward, no evidence, rising to the level of reasonable medical probability on causation.
Absolutely.
And the loss of chance cases are applicable only to the extent they discuss that issue.
Absolutely, Your Honor. That's exactly what our position is, and that's why this should be affirmed. Thank you.
If you would add 1 minute for rebuttal, since we went a little over. Thank you. Mr. Perrin?
Thank you. Going to that last issue first, the evidence in the record is that the PET scan that was taken said that there were indications that there might be, I'm not using the exact words, but that there was something that might be suggestive of metastatic disease and that further confirmation was required. Dr. Rana testified that he thought that these were worrisome findings. He claims that's what he told the patient. There's a dispute of fact about that, but that's not what we're here about today. And he wanted to do another PET scan, he says, and was telling the patient, so he felt there was enough time to do it. He obviously didn't think there was metastatic disease at the time that this happened, and there's evidence in the record that creates a question of fact, therefore, about that. In his declaration, Dr. Karam, the plaintiff's expert, said at page 440 of the record, approximate cause of Patty Dunning's death on July 9, 2013 was the negligence of defendants. The failure by Dr. Rana to act appropriately, he said, was so far removed from the standard of care as to indicate reckless and conscious indifference to Mrs. Dunning's safety and welfare. The two factors for cause and fact, as the court is well aware, are number one, whether the actions were a substantial factor in bringing about the death, and number two, but for the actions, would the death have occurred? Now, the evidence in this record, in this summary judgment record, says that there's a question of fact as to that. A summary judgment was not appropriate because you could not conclude, just as a matter of law, that her death was inevitable on July the 9th, 2013. And again, the reason the timing is important is because that's it. That's the time that the person died. And that is when everything comes to an end. That is when everything converges, that whatever went before that caused this event, it all comes to a head, it all comes to an end for Mrs. Dunning and for her family on July 9, 2013. That death, which only occurred on that day, so it's the only day we have to work with, occurred because the defendants were negligent. And that is why we're here. We ask that this case be reversed. Thank you.
Gentlemen, thank you very much for your arguments. They've been helpful to the court. Your case is submitted.